Today's daf in Masechet Eruvin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf Chet. And I have a feeling that we're sort of losing control of the sugyas here. And what I would like to do is do a brief review with you of what we've done until this point so that we don't lose our overall perspective of what's going on. You might want to just keep notes for yourself so you can continue to review every day where it is that we are at in the structure of this Masechet. So we started at the beginning, remember, Daf Beis. So let's talk about Daf Beis. What did we do on Daf Beis? We discussed what the models were for this two-pronged issue of Mavui and Sukkah, where 20 Amot somehow pop up and 10 Tfachim pop up. And we looked for what the model would be. So we had the discussion about using the model as the Pischa Shel Hecha, possibly according to Rebbe Yehuda, using a model of Pischa Shel Ula. In the end, we spoke about the overall sense of the model of Pischam Shel Melachim. Meanwhile, we had to discuss the interrelationship of the Migdash and the Mishkan, because we were using those terms interchangeably, and that brought us into all those psukim. And, of course, meanwhile, on the, we can call it the multi-level construction of the Shabbos Erevin pair, we finally deal with those aspects of the Mishkan and Mikdash that we didn't deal with before in terms of the Pesach and of the Kalim. Now, that led us on Daf Gimel to the question of whether the model had specific qualities that mess up the Limud, namely the Amal Torah. We wanted to know why the Amal Torah would be something that would make a difference if the model had an Amal Torah and it was still Esrim. So we got into the whole discussion of what an Amal Torah is, which of course led us to an understanding of the interrelationship of Sukkah and Mavui in terms of Korah, in that it's Leman Yedu Dorotechem. In other words, it's something that has to be visible. It's something that people have to be able to pay attention to and to be aware of. So that would be true both for Gabe Sukkah and Legabe the Dinim of the Mavui. Once we spoke about that, we wanted to clarify the variations of the Amma, because the Esrim Amot that we're using over here, and once we started talking about the Amot of the Heichal and the Amot of the Ulam, that led us into a very curious situation in which the Amot in Yecheskel were clearly defined as two separate sets of Amot being used for different things. And that brought us to the difference between the areas of the Mizbeach that were measured by an Amma of five and the areas which was the Yesod and the Sovev, different parts, of course. The Yesod was talking about the height, the Sovev was talking about the width, but the point is that, and the Kronot. So the point is that we had special Amot that were used, at least for the Mizbeach. Then we had a discussion also on Amud Beis about whether the Kalim of the Beis HaMikdash Bechlal, and again, all of this is one of the most fundamental issues, remember. It sounds like some kind of side point, but all through Masechet Shabbat and Masechet Erevin, the Mishkan has been the primary focus, just as it was in the Torah. The source of Malachas is the Mishkan. The source of our Tikkunim of Erevin in terms of the sizes is the Mishkan. So we went to discuss over there Amma Bat Chamesh, Amma Bat Shesh, the difference between happy Amot and sad Amot. That was on Daf Gimel. Gimel Amud Beis was particularly talking about the Amot Sochakot, also on the Atzuvot, which led us into understanding on Dalid the idea, the special idea of the Amma of Kelayim, where we would be Machmer by Kelayim, where we would be Machmer Lagabe Sukkah and Lagabe Mavoi, and the Mizbeach. And that led to the general question, where do all of these shiurim come from? And that took up Dalet Amud Beis, essentially, which was about shiurin, chatzitzin, and mechitzin, the remuzim that we had to them, and the relationship to the posik of the Shivas Haminim in Eretz Yisrael, and what elements were midiraisa in terms of having a remez in the posik, and which elements were entirely the halacha l'mashe miSinai, which, remember, brought us also to recognize that there are some aspects, even only by Rabbi Meir, that are entirely halacha l'mashe miSinai, and that was the various dinim of good. We had dofen akuma, we had lovud, and that was all on daf dalet. Fine. So those were very general introductions to basically the terminology of what it was we were talking about, the overall concepts. Where did they come from? How did they relate, in fact, to overall measurements and to the various dinim in the Torah from whence those measurements come? Then we started moving on Daf Hey, into things that got us into more complexity in terms of understanding the relationship of the different parts of a mavoi, in terms of the relationship of its length and width and depth, and how those things are important to take all into consideration. So the way that we started this, remember, always the Gemara looks for an opening and then uses that opening to burst open a general concept. So the opening that we talked about is really the most logical thing that you should need to deal with after reading the Mishnah. And that is, of course, on one level, the Mishnah simply says, if the Korah is too high, so you might make it less. But make it less doesn't necessarily mean make it lower. Make it less means less space between the bottom and the top. Okay, so the Gemara immediately started wondering whether there's different ways to do that. I can do that by building up, or I can do it by taking the Korah down, obviously. And the same thing is true when we were talking about if it was not 10 Tefachim high. So then you have to make it higher. Well, or you can make the floor of the Mavli lower. Those two issues, which was Bola Ma'et or Bola Chokek, brought us into the question of what is the relationship of the length of the Mavli to the area that I'm changing. So that was called the Rochav when it was in terms of building up a step, and it was called the Meshech, the depth of the Mavli. We're talking about digging down the step. And that brought us afterwards to, it's brilliant the way the Gemara does this, because it looked like it was just being brought in as a raya. But in the end, we needed to discuss what the din would be of a lechi that was longer than Arba Amos. And the idea over there was that I need to also make the front of the Mavui closer than the 10 Amot. So I would need to do that by making sure that I built a wall. So that led us to the question, can I use that wall as the lechi? And that was the issue of the lechi going more than 4 amos. Once we needed to deal with the lechi going more than 4 amos, that led us to the question of, okay, but how big was the entire opening? So if the lechi was 4 amos and that was most of the opening, so then that was a Omed Merubah Laparutz. So that led to that next concept of Omed Merubah Laparutz. Then we had the question of whether I even need to make sure that it's Meruba, or whether I have a Sveikah Derabanan, because Eif Shelo Tzamtzem, unless I really go out of my way. That was the entire Daf Hey. Okay. Once we got to that, we needed to know, how do we relate the front of the Mavui to the sides of the Mavui? And the problem over there is, what happens if there's a break in the side, which then is a problem. Because if there's a break in the side, so then what connects the side of the Mavoi to the whole front? So if I'm in the back of the Mavoi, can I still use a Korah in the front if there was a break in one of the walls to the side, to the right or the left? And that led us to the distinction between a break in the front of the Mavoi, a break in the edge of the Mavui, which was the Keren Zavit, a break entirely on the side of the Mavui, and the differences between them, which revolved around what is really the Heksher Mavui, which turned out to be a Machlokas between Abaye and Rabbi Yosef. Are we talking about a Heksher Mavui that is in terms of Amot, or are we talking about in terms of Tfachim? Of course, that was first raised earlier when we were dealing with the different types of Amot. So are we talking about a question of Arba Amos? We had the same question, by the way, of a sukkah, remember, when we were talking about the measurements of the sukkah. Does a sukkah have to be Arba Amos, or can it also be measured in terms of Tvachim? Over there it was Shiva Tvachim plus. So that was the next question, and that led to one of the most fundamental machlokas. And that was the question of the machlokas of Hananya and the Rabbona. Now, Rabbosai, the only way that we got to that, remember, it sounds like it just came from nowhere. It didn't come from nowhere. It's a very straightforward development. Once we were talking about breaks on the side of the Mavui, that led inevitably to a Mavui that has a right turn in it that goes to a Rosh Hashanah at the end, which is called a Mavui Akum. So please remember, so far we have a Mavui Mefulash, we have a Mavui Satum, we have a Mavui Akum. The Mavoi Akum, the reason that that's the next obvious thing that we need to discuss, is exactly the way the Gemara got there. Because if a hole in the wall is a problem, even though it would be less than 10 amos, so then if any Mavoi Akum is essentially a hole in the wall of the Mavoi in which it breaks into. So that right turn is a hole in the wall, so to speak. What's the din of a hole in the wall? Okay, so over there we had a machlokas. If it's less than 10, we had a very important machlokas between Rav and Shmuel. Is a Mavoi Akum, a Mavoi with a right-hand turn in it, that is shaped like an L, is that Mavoi, which has got a Rishus Rabim on either end, is that similar to a Mavoi Mefulash, or is it similar to a Mavoi Akum? Now, Rav, or to a Mavoi, sorry, Satum. So Rav said, look, it's all one Mavoi, and it's basically open on both ends. You cannot be matir a Mavoi that's open on both ends with a Korah or a Lechi. That you've got to do something about. What exactly do we do about it? That is a different machlokas. According to Shmuel, that is considered to be bichlal, a Mavoi Satum, and not a Mavoi Patuach. And therefore Shmuel says, treat each one of the pieces of the L, the leg of the L, the side of the L, those are two separate Mavois. Each one of them is considered to be a Mavoi Satum, and close up the front with a Korah and a Lechi, and you will be fine. Now, I must warn you that that is a little bit of a misleading thing, which I have not found really the Mefarshim talking out properly, because the only way to understand sugyas throughout the Masechet is to take into consideration that that may be true, but only where you actually did put up a Lechi or a Korah on both of the ends. Shmuel is moda that if you do not put up something at both ends, then the people who want to use their Mavoi on their end, and they're concerned about the fact that when they look to the side, they see Rosh Hashanah, they have to put something in the midpoint. So they could put in a Lechi at the midpoint, which normally you wouldn't be able to do, obviously, if it was a Mavoi Mefulash. But he's made that you need to put something in the middle. And the pshat that Rashi brings from his Rabbeim, that you need something in the middle all the time, is not the way that Rashi follows throughout. But you do need something in the middle if there's nothing on the other end. That led us to the question of, okay, what do I do when I have a Mavoi Mefulash? This is a Mavoi Akum. That leads us to the machlokas of Chananya and the Rabbanan. The Rabbanan say if you have a Mavoi that is Mefulash between two true Rishus Harabim, that you need a Tzurat HaPetach on one end, and you read on the other end a Lechi or a Korah. But Chananya says, no, there's a big machlokas between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel about this, but nobody holds you can get away with what the Chachomim said just with the Tzurat HaPetach. You need a real door, okay? According to Beit Shammai, you need a door on both sides, and what's more, the door has to be shut. As long as it's not being used at that moment by somebody walking in and out, both doors need to be shut on both sides. We also had a little bit of a discussion there, which turned out to be very important to make things clear for us. We thought that we were talking about making an Erev and Rishus HaRabim, and we clarified there's no such thing. But meanwhile, that brought up the sheet of Reb Yehuda that two Bechitzot are enough for Rishus HaRabim, which we don't pass. Okay. Then we had a machlokas Rav and Shmuel about, do we paskin like Chananya, or do we paskin like the Rabbana? All right. Now, the question was, that led to the beautiful story about being machmir like two shitas that seem to contradict each other. And that was the story of a particular mavui that caused people, why are you upside down? Robert, you should speak to the kids. So, that caused us to deal with the question of, can we be machmer like two shitas? That is to say, treat a mavui the way that we actually did over there. We treated a mavui as if it were a mavui mefulash, and that was true according to Rav. But then we treated it as if it's a mavui mefulash that cannot be made mutter the way Rav says, namely with a tzuras haPesach. It would be only made mutter the way Shmuel says, namely with Beis Hillel's door on one end. And that led us into the whole question of the philosophical issue of our relationship to antithetical shitas, like a Beit Shammai, a Beit Hillel shita, the question of the Ksil B'Choshech Holech, and an understanding of the difference between consistency, where we're dealing with one issue that has various consequences in alternate circumstances, such as the case of Chisaron B'Shidra, where over there it has one implication, L'Kula, and one implication, L'Chumra, depending on whether you're dealing with the dinim of Tumas Meis or whether you're dealing with the dinim of Trefus of the Behemah, obviously. So it would be opposite. And the difference between that kind of case, where you have a real contradiction in the logic of the positions of Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, versus the case that we're talking about, where there isn't really any innate connection between whether you paskin like Hananya or the Rabbanan in terms of what to do with a mavi mafulish, and the question of whether something is a mavi mafulish. Who cares? If you want to be machmer like two shitas, okay, so be machmer like two shitas. That brought us also to the Indian of the bas kol that we spoke about, and the question whether we listen to bas kols, and so on. And then the last thing that we learned was a complex machlokas. It sounded complex. It isn't really all that complex, but it's confusing. And that's where we were yesterday. And that was talking about a case where a mavli comes to an end on one side in Rishus HaRabim, the standard mavli satum. But the problem is that on the other end, it doesn't have a wall that closes off the mavli. Instead, the mavli sort of peters out. What do you mean peters out? Well, basically, it breaks into somebody's backyard. And over there, it's the end of the movie. When we come to the end of the movie, you all of a sudden look around and you see, oh my gosh, I'm in somebody's backyard. And then you look across the backyard, and that yard has an exit to the Rishus HaRabim. So then the question was, is that exactly the same case as a front yard? Because we seem to have had a specific psak of Rav Yehuda that was only nogea backyards. So we thought that the issue would be that in a backyard, you don't have diurim, and therefore you do not need to deal with the issue of whether the people in the backyard will assert the usage of the mavoi because of the fact that the mavoi is broken into a backyard. Because people in a backyard are not significant in the halacha. Remember, it's only the indigenous people that can be part of the figuring the Rabbanan Gezerah of Erevin, in which one will asr on the other. It's not just people walking through. So a backyard doesn't have indigenous people. The fact that people once in a while will go through a backyard into a movie is not relevant. Thus, the Rabbanan didn't take that into consideration. Okay. So if Rav Yehuda specified a backyard, it seemed to be that he felt that in the event that it would be a front yard, we'd have a real problem, because over there, indeed, the fact that they don't have an Erev with one another would mean that one would Aser on the other. So he mentioned the backyard, because a backyard is the same thing as a front yard with an Erev. That's what we assumed the pshat was. And then when we it turned out that Rav spoke about a front yard, and Rav's front yard was talking about a case where there was a break in the front yard into Rishus HaRabim, which was connected to Mavui. And Rav said over there an interesting thing, that the chotzer is mutter and the mavui is osir. Now, the reason that he said the mavui is osir seems to be because of the fact that it had a hole in the wall opposite the mavui. Because otherwise, if the issue would merely have been a problem of Erev, then it wouldn't have mattered whether it was a hole in the wall. And yet Rav specified, and there's a hole in the wall. So that means because there's a hole in the wall, not because of the Erev apparently, but because there's a hole in the wall, that would be the problem. And that would imply that Rav held that a hole in the wall is considered to be a mavi mafulash, even though the mavi opens up into another area. And Rabbi Yehuda says exactly the opposite. A hole in the wall doesn't matter. The haraya, if it breaks into a backyard with a hole in the wall, doesn't matter. So the only reason I say it has to be a backyard is because not having an Erev is a problem. But Rav, who's talking about a front yard, did not have to talk about a hole in the wall if the Erev wouldn't have been an issue. So there seem to be two opposite shitas over here. That is, that according to Rav Yehuda, the hole in the wall is not considered to be a problem, but not having an Erev is considered to be a problem. And according to Rav, having a hole in the wall is a serious problem, turns the Movi into a Movi Mefulish, but the fact that it does not have an Eruv with the people in the Chatzer doesn't bother me. Why would it not bother me? That's the question we have to talk about today. That's the question that we left off with. According to the way we ended up understanding yesterday, it's only a theoretical question, because in the end, it turns out there was no such machlokas. And the reason that Rav had said that there needs to be a hole in the wall in the Chatzer, we thought that that's what made the Isser on the Mavrik. No, it turns out that he only mentioned the hole in the wall in the Chatzer to tell me that nonetheless the Chatzer is Mutter. We're going to see what that issue was all about. It was not because there was, the case was talking about where they had made an Erev, so that was not the problem. Rav was not focusing on the Erev. And if they hadn't made an Erev, that's who made an Usser. If they did make an Erev, then it wouldn't have been Usser. So it turned out that there was very little difference between the Rav's case and Reb Yehuda's case. It was almost exactly the same. The only question was, what particular type of preventation of access of people to come in, what was nogea, whether it needed to be broken at the bottom or whether just the street on the other side was a kind of street that people don't go into, and so on and so forth. But actually, there was no serious difference between them. So what we left off yesterday, and that brought us up to Ches Omen Aleph, is, okay, but initially we thought that we had like a really serious machlokas here, from one extreme to the other extreme. How did we understand that machlokas? Can you explain it to me? So let's start at the very top again of Chet with today's daf. I hope that this brings you back a little bit into the sense of where we're at. It felt like it was like just overwhelming confusion. It's not confusion. It's beautifully organized. So now our next question is, okay, but Lomaita Solikadaita Mikar, the way that you initially understood it, what was the big machlokas, right? I mean, the way you understood it, they were arguing in all cases, because it didn't matter whether there was an Erev or not. They were arguing because Reb Yehuda was talking about a case where, for all intents and purposes, there was an Erev because there were no diurans. It's the same thing. And it made no difference. There were two separate arguments, one that had to do with the question of whether the whole is considered Mamavim a foolish, and the other one whether you needed the Erev. So in the case where they made an Erev, right, what the only reason that I would ask in that case would be because there's a Rishus Sarabim, and therefore I turned this into a Mavim a foolish. So what were they arguing about? What's the principle? And how about in the case where there was no Erev and what would be the machlokas? Because apparently over there also, there would have been a machlokas even if there hadn't been a break in the wall. Because according to Reb Yehuda, I needed to talk about a Rechava specifically because a Rechava doesn't have the urine. But apparently, if they wouldn't have made an Erev, it would have been Usser even if there was no break in the wall. So can you please explain the machlokas to me? Okay, says the Gemara. Look, in the case, again, this is all theoretical because in the end it turned out they're not arguing about this. But theoretically speaking, in the case b'shelo iravu, there was no Erev. And the question was, just because there's a hole in the wall across the yard that the mavui opened into. Okay, so what exactly would be the din about whether the Erev... Right now, let's ignore the hole in the wall. Right? What's the question of whether you need an Erev or not? So here's the question. They're arguing about nira bebachutz v'shava bebifnim. Because what happens in a mechitza, where a mechitza is visible on one side and not visible on the other side? What does that mean? Very simple. Imagine a case where you have a small room that opens into a big room. Now, when you're standing in the big room, and you're looking at the small room, on either side of the wall, you see that there's wall, and then all of a sudden there's another room. So obviously it's clear to you that that's another room. So then that means that the mechitzas on the side of the room that you're looking at are mechitzas as far as you're concerned. On the other hand, if you're standing in a small room and you're looking out, you don't see any mechitzas because you have no idea whether there's some wall that's going on to the side. You just look ahead and there's a door in front of you and there are no mechitzas as far as you're concerned. So to you, it looks all like one thing. So that's a machlokas. Basically, The question over here is, do these walls, is it clear or do I need to show an illustration? Is this quite obvious what we're talking about? Does anyone need an illustration? Just imagine Menachem Tzion Barnea. When you're inside the big room, you do not see, this was the whole problem with the psak over there, that you're allowed to daven in the bottom room, which you're not allowed to. The side walls, when you're standing in the bottom room, make their mechitzas when you're going into the top wall. It's only from the top that you don't see mechitzas going down into the bottom. Understood? Or you need a picture? Just give me a thumbs up if you understand. Okay, good. So then the question would be, Rav says, okay, that kind of thing is fine. And therefore, the Mavoi is not considered to be porutz into the chutzer. It's separated by a mechitza. There's an entrance in that mechitza. So now the adin over there is, I do not need an Erev in that kind of rishus. Why? Because it's true that normally when I have a opening between a chutzer and the Mavoi, obviously I need to have a shitof with the Mavoi. But that's only true where the main opening of a chutzer is to go through that Mavoi. In this case, it is not the way that people normally would have walked from that chutzer. This chutzer was broken into by the end of the Mavoi, you see? So then our real problem is it parutz? If it's parutz, then you got a problem. Because then, indeed, if there's no mechitza whatsoever, then this chutzer is an open chutzer and you cannot carry in that chutzer. But since Rav holds that if I can see visibly mechitzas on either side from where I'm standing, and in the chutzer I see beautiful mechitzas on either side of this hole in the wall, which is the Mavoi, so according to him, this chutzer is a normal chutzer, except it's got a hole in the wall. So what? It's not more than 10 amas, the hole in the wall. And I have my main exit is from my own Mavoi on the other side of my chutzer, or directly to Rosh Hashanah, as the case may be. And therefore, what's my business with this Mavoi? I have no problem with this Mavoi. But Shmuel holds that if you have a mechitza that is completely flush on one side, then it's invisible. And therefore, if that's the case, it is a Mavoi that is porut into the chutzer. And because of that, they need to have an Erev between them. You don't have a choice. The only time you have a choice at whether you want to make an Erev with somebody else is where there's a doorway between you. So then you can make a decision. Do you want to make an Erev to be together or not? But in this case, you do not have a choice, says Shmuel, which is Reb Yehuda here that we thought was going a little bit to be Shmuel. Okay, so that's one machlokas. Again, this is an important terminology. Nirem bibachutz v'shaveh mibifnim. Okay, that was the machlokas. Now, what about in the case where they did make an Erev? And the question is, am I allowed to carry in the Mavoi because of the pirtza in the wall where we thought that Rav is saying, well, if there's a pirtza in the wall, it doesn't matter. You can't carry no matter what. What was the machlokas there that we thought was a machlokas? Turns out there isn't. But they were arguing about Rav Yosef. What did Rav Yosef said? Now, gentlemen, unfortunately, this piece of Gemara is very poorly described because they're not really arguing in Rav Yosef. It's very misleading, as Tosfos explains. It's very misleading to say they're arguing in Rav Yosef. It's just that Rav Yosef added a little bit of material to make us understand the Machlokas a little better. But it's not that without Rav Yosef we would have been up the creek without a paddle. We would have been the same essential Machlokas, except Rav Yosef clarifies it by pointing out that this entire discussion Rav Yehuda gave, where he said, yes, there we were. Remember, Rav Yosef says, there we were in this shepherd's village. And in shepherd's village, there was the shaila about what to do, and this was what they set to do, right? I don't know whose psak it was. All I know is that that's what he said. That's what Rabbi Yosef said yesterday. So Rabbi Yosef said, I just want you to know that the case over there in shepherd's village is that it's only because the Mavoi was petered out in the middle of someone's backyard. And it was in the middle of the yard. And therefore, when you came out into that yard, the Mavoi basically, if you look to the right, you see you're in a yard. And if you look to the left, you're in a yard. And that's why it was in the middle of the backyard. on both sides. That's why he said, I didn't need to do anything for the Mavoid, because there it extends on both sides. Nobody's going to mistake that for a normal Mavoid that keeps going, because it doesn't keep going. But let's say that actually the hole into the backyard was along one of the walls, so that when you come to the end of the Mavoy, to your right, the wall continues on all the way to the end of the wall of the backyard, the other guy's backyard that borders on the street. And it's only to your left that you see you're in this big backyard. Well, in that case, it's very bad, because since on one side it looks like the Mavoy continues going, so then he wouldn't have allowed us to not deal with it, because it looks like it has Rosh Hashanah on the other end. So the only time that Rav Yehuda said you don't need to do something is where it's clear that a Mavi goes on both sides. And that's what we thought was the machlokas between Rav and Shmuel. And we thought that Shmuel held that then is that the Mavi is considered to be a Mavi that is Satum, and therefore there is no problem. Whereas Rav held that, no, in this case, since you see directly Rosh Hashanah in front of you, then there would be a problem. That's what we thought. Okay. And that's the machlokas. Omar Rabbah. Now, I want to clarify something else, says Rabbah. I don't like the way everybody's talking about this. Because until now, everybody's been saying, if there's a break in the wall that is opposite the end of the Mavoi. Now, I want you to know, guys, that's not true. It's very misleading. If the break in the wall is exactly opposite the Mavoi, that's a problem. So Hoda Amret le'emtza rechava mutar. You said that it's okay if it goes into the middle of the guy's backyard, but that's only if the hole that goes through the wall on the opposite end of the guy's backyard is not directly opposite the break in the wall where the Mavi broke into the backyard. But if it really is directly against where, then it would be aser, because then it really looks like a Mavi mefulash. So then that means that when Rav said that the wall keneged the Mavoi has a break, it doesn't mean the break is directly opposite the Mavoi. It means the wall with the break is directly opposite the Mavoi. But the break itself is a little bit to the right or the left, and you do not look directly into the Rosh Hashanah from the Mavoi, because that would be considered to be looking like a Mavoi mefulash, and nobody would have been matired. And that's the way, even when we came out and we said, Rav doesn't really care about the fact that there's a break in the wall. He would care about that break. Yes, indeed. And even when we ended up saying that they end up agreeing with each other, it doesn't mean that they would agree in this case. They would agree, but I mean, they would both be machmer in this case. Now, Rav Mesharshia says, I want to add another point, okay? Rav Yosef just said that Hadamart, you, Rav Yosef, just said, that zeh shelo keneged zeh is mutter. That as long as the break is not directly opposite the other one. Okay. I just want you to know something, that that is not true in all cases. That's only true when the backyard is an area that is owned by a lot of different people. And therefore, there's not going to be any changes in it. But imagine the case where somebody's got a private backyard, and your Mavoi smashes the wall at the end, smashes down, and now you have a breach into this guy's backyard. You say, okay, I may have a breach, but it's not a big problem because the hole is not facing my Mavoi directly. And when I walk out into the other guy's backyard, I notice that I have room on the right side and I have room on the left side, and it wasn't as if there was one wall that continued directly. Now, let me point out something, says Rav Mesharshia. If you have an area that is owned by one person, then that means that architectural changes in that area are highly likely. Suppose the guy wants to build a garage or a storage room in the backyard, right? So the place where he wants to build his garage is right up at the point where the break in my Mavoi entered into his backyard. Now, all of a sudden, even though for the past 5 years I've been carrying there and the rabbi of the community said I'm allowed to carry there and there's no problem in my Mavoi, all of a sudden after this guy builds his garage, now my Mavoi extends directly with one wall all the way to the wall that has the hole in it into Rosh Hashanah, and I don't even notice. So in cases where there are going to be architectural changes, You cannot rely on these kind of Piskei Halakas where everything is so dependent on the architecture of that point. Because here the geometric configuration is so fundamental to the heter of the carrying that if it's liable to change, it should not be mutter in the first place. Why? Because if it's a rechava de yachid zimnin de mimna lechana, he may decide to do some building. Uboni labati, maybe he'll build in the back of his yard, he'll build some additional storage houses, and then it would be a mavoi that was called a letzide rechava. It'll come out right at the edge, and then it'll be aser. Now, how does Rebbe Sharshia know that this is a real principle? And that you have to worry about the difference between a personal ownership or a public ownership about how likely it is that there are going to be configural changes because of building. Well, I'll prove it to you. Minotei medushani lan rechavad rabim lerechavad yachid. The Omer Ravim Baravada Om Rav Yitzchak. There was once a story of a happy mavui. And this happy mavui, all the little children used to walk around in this happy mavui, and they were all very happy for many years. So one side of this mavui, you see soon why the children are so happy, because one side of this mavui was actually the seashore. What fun it was to walk through this mavui and walk along the seashore on your left side. And the other side was even more fun because it was a garbage dump, and the kids loved to play in the garbage dump. So there was, in the garbage dump side, there was a pile of garbage that was 10 tefachim high, and that made one side of the mavui. And the other side of the mavui, there was a seawall that was 10 tefachim deep, and that made the other side of the mavui. The mothers used to go crazy all the time for both reasons, because the kids used to fall into the river, and they also used to climb into the garbage dump. But the bottom line was that this mavui was a perfectly happy mavui, having a mechitza on either side, one going up and one going down. So they came to Rebbe, and they wanted to know, is it okay to rely on this mavui, because it doesn't have normal walls, and when you continue walking to the end of the sea and to the end of the garbage dump, you find yourself in a busy highway, which is a Rishus HaRabim, and they wanted to know if this is a kosher mavoi to be matir with a lechi or not. He refused to say, and he wouldn't say that it's usur, and he wouldn't say that it's mutter. The reason he wouldn't say it's usur is because it wasn't, because there were currently perfectly reasonable mechitzot. The garbage dump is a mechitza, and the seawall is a mechitza. So, okay, I'm a mechitza. He couldn't tell them it's not a good mavoi. On the other hand, he did not want to be quoted as saying, yes, this is a perfectly good mavoi, because then that perfectly good mavoi is going to become part of people's religious beliefs. Yes, Rebbe said this was a good mavoi. Yeah, Rebbe said it was a good mavoi until they moved the garbage dump. Or Rebbe said it was a good mavoi until it silted up on the side of the sea, and now it was no longer a real wall because it became a gradual slope into the sea and it lost its din of a mechitza, because remember, mechitza's got to be able to, within Arba Amos, make a difference in height of 10 tefachim. And if it silts up, that is very rapidly going to change. And the last thing that Rebbe wanted is for it to be put in the books that this mavoi has the heksher of the Beis Yosef. That is not what he wanted. So because of that, he refused to say anything about it. Okay. So, heter lo amarba, because he was afraid maybe the trash was going to be moved. So, chashina chemetina tela ashpa, or maybe there would be silting up on the side of the sea, and it wouldn't have any more a din of a mechitza. So, even though it was kosher, he didn't want his name attached to it. Now, we're still in the middle of our proof. The Gemara asks, but we don't seem to really have that kind of concern, because there's a Mishnah that says that in the event... This is a Mishnah here in Ervin later on, that in the event that you have a garbage dump in the Rishus HaRabim, that garbage dump is 10 tefachim high plus, and you live on the third story above that garbage dump, you don't have any problem. You can throw from your window to that garbage dump because you're throwing from your Rishus HaYachid into a Mokum Ptur because it's Lamala Mi Asara. Okay. Now, if the garbage dump may one day be moved, and then it is not going to be Lamala Me'asara, we wouldn't have been matir, right? and it says Chalon She'al Gabav. You have a window on top of it. You can throw to it. So you see, what's the answer? It must be that Rebbe was talking about a private garbage dump which could be moved, and the Mishnah is talking about a Rosh Hasharavim garbage dump which won't be moved. So you see that Shani Bein Ashpa the Rabim Lashpa the Yachid. So the same thing is true over here in the case of a Movoi that got into somebody's backyard. If it's a private backyard, you have a problem because there may be changes in the configuration. And Shani Rechava the Rabim L'Rechava the Yachid. By the way, you told us what Rebbe didn't want to do. I mean, obviously they did get a psak somewhere, right? What was the psak that they got from the other Rabbanan? Could they use that Movoi or not? So for Rabbanan Mai, Omer Rav Yosef Bar Avadimi, well, there's a writer that says that the Chachomim said it was definitely osur, and that they held that the cheshash of a change is enough to osur it now, which goes beyond Rebbe. They actually, you can't use it even now. And Omer Rav Nachman, halacha k'divrei Chachomim, that's really true. Okay, ikini amri, Omer Rav Yosef Bar Avadimi, others say the opposite, that the Chachomim were matirin. And they're not worried about changes. There'll be a change, so fine, so you'll change the psak. And in this version, Rabbi Nachman says, well, we don't paskin like that. No, we worry about it, and therefore not allowed to use it. Okay, now, because of this problem, the town of Sura, which bordered on the river, had a lot of mivvoot that ended up at the end of the block being at the river. So Sura was basically a beach town. Seagate, right. And in a beach town, all of the roads, all of the little mivoot, this is true all over, all little mivoot end up basically stopping at the sea. So because of that, there was the other side was considered to be a mavoi satum. But Maremar was very nervous about that because he said that what if the sea silts up? And then you're not going to have 10 tfachim within an area of Arba Amot. And because of that, you cannot rely on these mivoot to be considered to be a mavoi sosum, because they may be a mavoi that's befoolish into a carmelite, like the yam, right? So because of that, he, in a very beautiful way to deal with a mavoi in a sea town, he's not going to close up the mavoi. What you do is, in the sea, is you put up fishing nets. So then it looks very natural. So you put some fishing nets at the end of the mavoi, and every mavoi, people can't complain. What do you mean? Well, now I feel like I'm living in New York City with this big wall that you built, Maremar. I didn't build no wall. I put up some beautiful decorative sea nets. Okay, so now we're all fishermen. And therefore, he said, Chashina Shema Yala Yam Sirton, I'm very nervous, and that's why I want to make sure this doesn't happen. Now, there was a Mavoi Okum that was in Sura. So the Mavoi Okum we spoke about before, the Machlokas of Rav and Shmuel, right? According to Shmuel, a Mavoi Okum is a two separate Mavoi Sosums. And according to Rav, a Mavoi Okum is a Mavoi Mefulish, right? Just remember, we spoke about that earlier this morning. So what they did over there was that they wanted, and here was the problem that I mentioned. The people on one end of the L did not make a korah or a lechi for their mavoi. And the guys on the other end of the L, they wanted to carry in their leg of the L. So what they did was, is they rolled up a mat and they put the mat in the corner where the right turn was of the 90 degree turn. And then on the other side, they put a korah and they said that would be enough. So, now remember, according to Shmuel, what should be the din here? That either side could use a lechi or a korah, right? Because each side was a separate mavoi satum. The only thing is that according to Shmuel, as I mentioned to you earlier, that's only true if the other people also make it. If the other people don't also make it, so then you need to put something in the akmimut, in the turn. And that's exactly what they did. But they didn't put up with a hammer and a nail, a lechi. They were pretty lazy, and they took a mat from somebody's house, and they rolled up this mat that was 10 tefachim high, and they put it in the corner, and they said, here, now this is a perfectly kosher lechi. I mean, it doesn't have to be nailed in, does it? So Rav Chisda said, well, no, this is no good. Haloka Rav Haloka Shmuel, because if you're going to say it's according to Rav, you really have a problem, because Rav says this is a Mavi Mefulash, and if you have a Mavi Mefulash, you're going to have to put in a Tzuzah Pesach, okay? And according to Shmuel, who says that it's Kisatum, and you do need a Lechi, well, you need a real Lechi, you can't have a rolled up mat, because again, this is one of those problems of changing configurations. And in this case, what's the changing configuration? The blowing wind. All you need is a little bit of wind to unroll that mat, and it's going to throw it down. So that's not a kosher lechi. So that's lav klumu. You'd have to actually nail it in. So inayz beisich. I agree. If you put a nail through it and you attach it to the wall, then that would be fine. But it would be fine according to Shmuel, of course, not according to Rav. So agufa. I want to get back to the case that we spoke about earlier. And that was the case of Rav that we've been agonizing over here. The case of a Mavi that got completely busted into a chutzer, and then the chutzer itself had a hole in the wall on the other side into the Rishus HaRavim. So remember, Rav said the chutzer is mutter, and the Mavi is, however, usser. And we said before, the reason that it's usser, we're talking about over here, there's no Erev, and that carrying in the chutzer is okay because it has mechitzas. And it's only carrying in the mavui that's not okay, because for the mavui, it's parutz into the chutzer. So Amarle Rabba Bar Ula L'Rabibi Bar Abaye, I don't get it. I mean, you make it sound like this is a big chiddush. Isn't this a Mishnah later on in the Masechet? And that Mishnah is the case of a chotzer kitana shenifritza legedola. This is the classic case in the Mishnah of a mechitza visible on one end and invisible in the other end. So you have this big room, and into this big room, we open up a wall from a small room so that in the big room, you see now an opening for the small room with a wall on either side. But in the small room, you don't see any walls at all. You just see the big door in front of you. It says over there that if a chatzar kitana opened up into a chatzar gedola, then the gedola is still considered to be mutter, and it is not necessary for that gedola to make an eruv with the kitana, because we're not part of that room. That's like a different chatzar. We don't want to have anything to do with them. That's fine. They're not mechuyev too, but the ketana has no choice because the ketana has been subsumed into the gedola. Now, that's exactly the case that Rav said. So I don't understand. What do you make this big deal about Rav? In this case, the big room is the chotzer, right? And you said Rav isn't talking about the issue of the wall on the other side. That was been okay, a different issue. Rav was talking about the question of whether you need an eruv with the other chotzer, or whether you need to be mitzarif this chotzer in the mavui. That's what he said is the problem. So that the chotzer has no problem, but the mavui has a problem. As far as the mavui is concerned, this chotzer is totally parut. Thank you very much. That's what the Mishnah said about little rooms and big rooms. So that vis-a-vis the chotzer, they look at the mavui as being a different rishus. They don't want to have anything to do with them. But vis-a-vis the mavui, the chotzer is part of, they are completely subsumed. That's the big room. So I don't understand. To Farish Mishnah, the katana is asur mipneshi ikipitcha shel gedolah. So what's Rav telling us beyond that? Okay, Amalei says, Rabbi, I'll tell you what he's telling us. He's telling us a tremendous chiddush. For God's sake, Rav mentioned the fact that there's a hole in the wall that goes out to the Rishus HaRabim. Okay, now what does that mean? So if I only had known the Mishnah, I would have said, okay, that's very nice. Remember the din of Bakei Bo Rabim. So the only reason I would have said, the only reason that the Mishnah said that it's okay is because there's no issue over there of the public traveling through the chutzer. But in this case, the public is traveling through the chutzer. So maybe the chutzer in that case is no longer considered to be a chutzer that you're allowed to carry in because you've got people driving through. No, not true. You're right. Okay. You're right that Rav is adding that, but the thing is, I don't need Rav to add that because there's a Braita that adds that, because Anami Tanina, a chotzer with a Rabim are nichnasim lo bezo v'yotzin lo bezo. Okay, exactly this case. People have figured out that they can make a left turn into this chotzer and cut through the Mavoi into Fifth Avenue on the other side and spare themselves waiting for the light and then just turn into Fifth Avenue, right? Everybody's going to be doing that. So this says the Braita that even if that is done, the area does not become Rishus HaRabim. It does become Rishus HaRabim for Tuma, obviously, because remember Tuma, the question of whether it's a Suffolk Tuma Rishus HaRabim or a Suffolk Tuma Rishus HaYachid is defined by the number of people generally found in the area. So of course it's a Rishus HaRabim for Tuma. Everybody's breaking in. But it doesn't change at all for Shabbos. It still remains Rishus HaYachid LeShabbos, which means you're allowed to carry. So what is Rav telling me? There's nothing that he's telling me says that's a Chiddush. Oh, says the Gemara, not true. When you read in the Braita that it's a Rishus HaYochid for Shabbos, does that tell you you're allowed to carry in it? Or does it simply tell you, listen, don't think it's not a Rishus HaYochid, man. If you throw something from Rishus HaRabim into that Rishus HaYochid, you're going to be Chayev Skila. It's a 100% Rishus HaYochid. Does that mean that the Rabbanan allow you to carry in it? Does that mean that it's not considered to be a problem of diurim because of the traffic running through it? No. Rav is telling you a fantastic Kiddush. So I would have said, if I only had that, so first of all, let me tell you something. I would have thought that this is only where I don't have a direct opening of one to the other side. But if it would open on the other side, then maybe even the Braisa would say it would be also. I don't know. Excuse me? Didn't Rabba say if it's really open, Zekeneged Zeh, that nobody argued? What happened to that? Didn't Rabba say Zekeneged Zeh is Osir? So then, what's the case according to Rav? For God's sake, according to Rabba, it's talking about Shalok and Eged Zeh. Zeh Shalok and Eged Zeh. So what is the Chiddush? I don't understand. So now you're telling me that Rav is saying exactly the same thing as the Braisa and the Mishnah together. And I can no longer talk about, well, but maybe Rav is adding that it was directly. It wasn't directly according to Rav. So what was the Chiddush? Oh, that's like I said, the Chiddush over there would be, I would think it's a Rishus HaYochid D'oraisa in terms of throwing into it, but in terms of allowing you to carry in it, L'chatchila, L'tatel, maybe not. So Rav is coming to be matir that. So now I understand the entire thing. This leaves us with one additional issue of a kind of mavoi. So we've talked about a mavoi okum, and we've talked about a mavoi mafulish, and we've talked about a mavoi sosum. But what we now introduce is a centipedal mavoi. What is a centipedal mavoi? A centipedal mavoi is a mavoi that has legs all the way along, like a centipede, which is basically a very standard configuration of city blocks. So we take a look at the smaller streets as having openings on their sides, and the openings on their sides on both ends could be open, but this one is only open on one end. But it's got a lot of side streets, and every one of those side streets opens up into Rishus HaRabim. So now it's a multiple Mavoi Okum. It's got a lot of little feet. According to Tosfos, the centipede aspect, which is called a nadal in Hebrew, the centipede aspect is because the centipede's legs are offset. And therefore, they need to be offset, says Tosfos, because if they're not offset, then you've got a problem of a new Mavoi Mefulash from each street through the Rishus HaRabim on either side. That goes beyond the problem of a Mavoi Okum. Okay, that's a separate machlokas. Let's assume that we're talking about offset streets. So what did they do with that mavoi that was asui kim nadal? It was made like a centipede. Said, Abai, I'll tell you what to do. All you need to do is you put a tzuras ha-pesach at the front door, the main door, not the small little legs on the sides. And then each one of those little side legs, which is a smaller mavoi that runs off into Rishus HaRabim, you can simply do either a lechi or korah at the front of them, at their Rishus HaRabim. You do not need to do anything in the middle. In other words, at the bend, there's no need for anything. Okay, now this is clearly going like Shmuel, right? Because, in other words, we're treating this as a mavoi satum. That is to say, the long part is a mavoi satum, and the short parts are all mavoi satums. And you don't need anything in the middle, because according to Rav, there was a big problem. It was all a mavoi mefulash, right? Okay, so we're going to deal with each one of the legs of the centipede as a separate mavoi, which makes a great deal of sense according to Shmuel. The problem is that something makes no sense in what Abai is saying, because if you're going like Shmuel, who says we're treating this as a mavoi satum, Where the heck did Shmuel come off needing a Tzurat HaPetach, for heaven's sakes? Shmuel never needed a Tzurat HaPetach. The only one who needed a Tzurat HaPetach was Rav. And according to Rav, you needed to put the Tzurat HaPetach in the middle to separate the two legs from each other. And then you were allowed to put a Korah and a Lechi at the end of the two parts of the L. So this thing is nuts. Doesn't make sense according to anybody. According to Shmuel, it sounded like it was making sense, but then I heard the part about the Tzurat HaPetach. Shmuel doesn't even start with the Tzurat HaPetach, and therefore it makes no sense. But it can't be like Rav, because according to Rav, you have to be metake in the middle part, because Rav holds it's considered to be a mavim of foolish. So what kind of psak is this? A buy-in? It's not going like anybody. So if you're saying it's kishmur, lomalei tzurat ha-petach, not to mention the fact, od, I happen to know about an actual case in Naharda where there was a mavoi okum, and we talked about that mavoi okum in Naharda. Hey, man, Naharda was Shmuel's Rabbanut. That's where Shmuel was the Rosh Yeshiva, in Naharda. And even in Naharda, where everybody was passing like Shmuel, they were still nervous about Rav's Pshat, and remember that they were Machmer to treat that Mavo Yochum back in Naharda. They said, we're going to treat it L'chumra like Rav, and we're going to pretend that it has a din of a Mavo Mefulash. So I understand. You can't, I mean, we're not talking about over here in Naharda, so for sure we should be worried about Rav. Even in Naharda, we're worried about Rav. How are we not worrying about Rav and you're paskening Abaya straight out like Shmuel? Forget it. I don't buy into Abaya's pshat over here at all, says Rav. On the contrary, I say we treat this centipede as Rav would have treated the centipede. And therefore, Elam Arava, what you got to do is you have to make a Tzurat HaPesach for every single one of the bends. So each one of the legs, when it hits the big side, needs to have a Tzurat HaPesach, because that is the akmimut of each one of these Mavoi Okums. And then on the other side, you can use a Lechi and a Korah. That's like Rav. That's fine. But I don't think you can get away with what Abaya is talking about. It doesn't even make sense to do what Abaya is talking about. Omer of Kahana Bar Tachlifa. Mishmeder of Kahana Bar Malkia. We got a lot of Rav Kahanas over here. So Rav Kahana Bar Tachlifa said over in the name of Rav Kahana Bar Minyumi, in the name of Rav Kahana Bar Malkion, in the name of Rav Kahana, who was the Rabbi of Rav, got a lot of Kahanas here, and actually, some say that Rav Kahana Bar Malkion was the same person as the Rav Kahana Rabbi to Rav, but in any event, whoever it was who said it, it goes like this. If you've got a mavoi shetzido echad aroch, v'tzido echad katsar, so basically, you have one longer wall. Now, you may have noticed the message from Benny this morning, who was kind enough to upload all of the images to the DAF group. It may be that it's going to be kedai for us to have those. You did only the light. You didn't do this page. I see. Okay. So maybe it's kedai for us to have a specific group for images. I don't know. What do you think, guys? Should we just put it on the DAF group, even though that sort of gets in the way of communicating? Just keep it on the DAF group, you think? Okay. All right. But I see that Benny forgot that we were going to do DAF Chesam and Beis. So we've got a problem over here, and I'll show you this problem, in which we've got one side is long and one side is short. So the mavoi comes out unevenly, right there, into the Rosh HaRabim, and some of it is sticking out. So what do you do in that case? You take the Korah, and you can put the Korah, if you want to, on a diagonal. Well, thanks, Benny. You can put the Korah on a diagonal, and that way you don't lose out on the entire area of the part of the mavoi that extended outwards. And if, however, the difference between the long side and the short side is 4 amot, that is already too much. You can't put the Korah on a diagonal. You'd have to put it on a right angle, and you would lose the extra extension that you put out there. Whereas Rava says, I say in any event, you cannot use the diagonal for the Korah. You can only put the Korah on the smaller side. You're always going to lose, doesn't matter how big it is, you're always going to lose that extra amount. And says, Rava, look, I want to tell you, I'm going to be able to explain my reasoning. I'm going to be able to explain your reasoning. Here's the way I see it. Ema time and didi, the ema time and didu. First of all, let me explain why I believe that you cannot put a korah on the diagonal. You're going to have to leave the korah on the shorter side. And that's simply because think about what the point of a korah is. The point of a korah, in my opinion, is fundamentally to serve as a heker. Remember that we had this question before. Everybody agrees that there is undoubtedly an element of heker. And the question was only whether there is a mechanism other than the heker, namely the fact that the korah would act as an actual mechitza. And this would be true about lechi as well. Then we had the question of where would the heker be useful? Would the heker be useful even if it were only outside to the people in the Rosh Hashanah? Or must it be a heker for the people in the Mavui itself? So this question, my opinion in general is, says Rava, that there's no mechanism. It basically is there as a heker, and if there's a heker, then it works. When it's on a diagonal, you must admit that the heker is extremely weak because your eye does not really see how that korah on that diagonal up on top, how does that korah relate to the area, which is not in any particular place. It's not between any two walls. And because of that, I don't focus on the heker. That's what I believe. And so if you put it on a diagonal, you don't have a proper heker. And I'll tell you the other svar, okay? It's not that I don't understand it. Ema tama didu. The reason that there are those who hold that if it's less than four amas, you are allowed to, is because they hold that there's an additional element to a korah. Of course, it needs to be a heker. But they hold that the heker is fundamentally usable because of the fact that there's a mechanism for utilizing that korah in an effective way. What is that? It's a mechitza. In other words, so I view its end. Now, of course, we have a machlokas. Is it the outer end? Is it the inner end? But that's irrelevant right now. They hold that since it's a mechitza, then it certainly is a mechitza ba'alachson, okay? Once the mechanism is there, I cannot say that, well, it's not a good heker, because it's not fundamentally working as a heker. As long as it serves some element of heker, the fact that the mechanism is perfectly usable, even on a diagonal, outweighs the question of whether its hekerness is sufficient, because that wasn't the main point. According to me, the only point was the heker. And therefore, if there's anything that mitigates the heker, it's not usable. That's why I say you cannot use that korah ba'alachson. That explains the difference. Now, said Rav Kahana, now this is none of the above Rav Kahanas, okay? Those were special Rav Kahanas. Every one of them had an additional name. And poor Rav Kahana felt a little bit left out. I mean, every other Rav Kahana has been quoted. He's the only Kahana that's sitting around here and nobody's paying any attention to. So he says, excuse me, if we're in a Kahana world right now, so look, I mean, we're all Kahanas here, right? So, I mean, it's only right that I should have something to say. So I'm going to say something too, if you don't mind. That way I get quoted here also. So Eva Bubba, his characters. So I want to say something with the other Kahanas. I mean, we might as well make a political party once we're at it. So Ema Bamilta, Ha de Amrit, if you're telling me that you could put a Korah on a diagonal, there's an additional factor you need to take into consideration. The diagonal cannot be more than 10 amos, because if the diagonal is more than 10 amos, then basically you're undermining the entire concept of a petach. Because remember, I understand that the petach, if it were not a diagonal, would be less than 10 amot. But once you turn it into a diagonal, the moment that that diagonal crosses the 10 amot stage, so where's the petach? Remember that every petach has to be limited to 10 amot. More than that is a pirtzeh. If you're going to call the diagonal the petach, it can't be more than 10 amot. Therefore, yesh balach sono yoter mi eser, you have no choice. And over there, everybody agrees, you cannot make that korah on a diagonal. You have to put it keneged hakatzar. Now, many of the Rishonim say that that doesn't literally mean it has to be keneged hakatzar. There's nothing to prevent you making a shorter diagonal. So don't put it all the way out to the end. Put it out on a diagonal to the maximum of 10. Fine, that's fine. There's no sudden tipping point at which all of a sudden I can't do it as a diagonal. Others taina that either the diagonal is to the end or it's bechlal not even a heker. Okay. Iboilu. Now, the question, this is not a question about this case particularly. This is a question in general. Vis-a-vis this case, by the way, it's clear, according to both Rashi and Tosfos, that, of course, when we put the Korah down as a diagonal, the area that was behind the Korah, for sure, is usable. It's not that, it's just that the Korah is kosher, but you can only use it up to the small wall. Now, actually, you ought to ask yourself, why? Because, I mean, I understand that, remember, a mavoi's got three walls. Okay, isn't that the whole point? That if a mavoi has three walls, then you can fix the fourth wall. In this case, the mavoi doesn't have three walls. Because in the area where one of the walls extended further than the other wall, so where's the three walls of your mavoi? So why isn't that trying to be machshir, an area that generally we view as a rishus harabim? Isn't this a problem? I mean, what good is a Korah? A Korah only works in a mavoi of three walls. So Tosfos explains that that's true, but the reality is that in this case, the fourth wall certainly prevents that bekia of the rabim. And I'm just jutting smack bang into the middle of the street. It's preventing traffic from coming into the mavoi. And so because of that, it's basically a mavoi that's extended. And then this, you'd say, okay, but the rabbanan never allow that. You're right. They don't usually allow that. However, because of the fact that over here we're dealing essentially with a mavoi and an extension, they did not make a gezeira on this particular case. Now, there's another thing that Tosfos raises. The other thing that Tosfos raises is fascinating because it has many implications for other sugyas that we're going to be having. And that is that this is being said only according to those who agree that the Korah has a function of a mechitza, as Rava pointed out. Well, if a Korah has a function of a mechitza, it may mean it really has a function of mechitza, says Tosfos. And if you hold it's a mechitza, it is not a virtual mechitza. Well, it is a virtual mechitza, but it's not a Rabbanan virtual mechitza. It's a D'oraisa virtual mechitza and would follow the general dinim of the type of mechitzas that are gold mechitzas and pitikras mechitzas in which we do find halacha l'mishmisinai allowing these type of mechitzas. If you're telling me that a Korah functions in that fashion, so then by putting it across a diagonal, you have lowered a wall all along that side. And because of that, the mavoi really does have a full wall. That's an alternative. Okay, that's wonderful. Anyway, that concludes this issue. Now we have a general question. And the general question is, what is the din, bichlal, of areas under a Korah? So, mahu lishtamesh tachat ha-korah. Are we allowed to use the area under the Korah in general? Not this case, in Bichlal. Not behind the Korah, but actually under the Korah. So, okay, the Korah is wide. It's full tefach over there. Do I get to sit under there, carry under there, and so on? So Reb Chiya and Reb Yochanan say, you are allowed to. And we're going to see why that is. And Shmuel and Reb Shimon Bar Rebbe and Reb Rish Lakish, they all say you are not allowed to use the part that is directly under the Korah. Now, the question is, what would this revolve around? It possibly, shall we say, and we'll take the easy way out, one man diomar holds the Korah only works because of the fact that it's there as a heker, just to remind people that there's a difference between the mavoi and the Rosh Hasharabim, and the other man diomar, those who say that it's usur, they say that the Korah serves as an actual mechitza, and the part of it that's the mechitza is the inner part, in which case, if you're going to be on the other side of the inner part, which is the virtual wall, that's the force field that's coming down in front of the Korah, then you are, in fact, not behind the mechitza of the Korah. Maybe that's the point. Does the Gemara, well, maybe. But, I mean, certainly not necessarily. It may well be that all of the shittas over here agree that the function and the only function, without a mechanism of mechitza, is heker, the way that Rava said. Nonetheless, there could be a machlokas, because the machlokas would simply be that mar, when we say mar, we mean all of those shittas that say you're not allowed to use the area under the Korah. They hold that the point of the Heker is fundamentally for the people inside of the Mavoi, because to the people inside the Mavoi, it serves a dual purpose. First of all, it reminds them that Mavois and Rosh HaSarabims are different. And furthermore, it reminds them as they approach the Rosh HaSarabim, and they see all around them, there's another 50 people in the Mavoi, everybody's walking out the Rosh HaSarabim, and they start thinking psychologically, well, I mean, okay, we're in the street, so we'll just keep walking with everybody else, right? Wrong. All of a sudden, they look up and they see this Korah. So that prevents them from actually carrying out from the Mavoi into Rosh HaSarabim. That's an additional function. The other function is theoretical. You need to remember in general that Mavois are not Rosh HaSarabims, okay? So therefore, if you hold that the main idea of a Heker is for the people inside the Mavoi, well, then obviously you can't carry under the Korah because you no longer have a Heker. How are you going to see the Korah if you're under it? So maybe that's the shot. And if you hold, however, that it's mutter, so obviously they hold that the Heker is okay if it's a Heker milubar. People outside get the message. You don't have to get the message while you're inside. Or I can give you a third possibility. Maybe just the opposite. Maybe everybody agrees that there is a mechanism, namely a virtual wall, this force field that comes down. But the question is, where does the force field come down from? Is it from the inner edge of the Korah? From inside the Mavoi? Well, if it were, then you wouldn't be allowed to get under it. Or is it on the outside edge? And that's the machlokas. Mar sofer chudo apnimi. If you're not allowed to carry, it's because you hold it to the inside edge that comes down. Yorid v'sotem. And those who hold that you are allowed to carry under the Korah, they hold that the outside edge of the Korah is yorid v'sotem. Points out Reb Chista, all of this discussion is only valid when it comes to the area under a Korah. But in the area to the side of the Lechi, there is no question. Even those who allow you to carry under Korah agree that you're not allowed to carry between a Lechi and a wall. And that's simply because the Lechi has no minimal size. So if I can make a Lechi with a nearly invisible wire, and that's a perfectly good lechi, so then, I mean, to start talking about whether I can carry, I'm too close to the edge. And to be able to make a distinction at what point I'm going to carry out of the Mavoi, when we're dealing with questions of millimeters, doesn't make any sense. If you got a wide Korah, you could start dealing with the fact that I could still able to keep an inch away, at least from the edge, right? But not when I'm dealing with a lechi. So even if I happen to have a big lechi, I'm going to start making distinctions in the different cases of lechis.